Good morning, friends. Thanks for being here as we talk about the ways that resurrection shows up in our own lives. I'll open us with prayer and then pass it over to the real experts in the room. God be with you. Let us pray. God of resurrection, we give thanks for your presence around us in every living thing. May the beauty of spring keep us mindful of your resurrection. May each opening flower be a sign to us of your presence, of your glory, of your joy, and of hope for the world. In God's holy name we pray. Amen. Karen, over to you.
Thanks, Adeline. Thank you, Adeline. Thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. My name is Karen Abrams. I chair the Environment Committee at St. Columba's. I'm also on the vestry. And I come to this topic with great enthusiasm, career of 30 years in natural resource conservation, coastal habitat restoration, and marine conservation. So really pleased to be talking to you about this today. I'm joined by Ethan Lucas, who is with the Interfaith Power and Light. And he is a Chesapeake Conservation and Climate Corps member for Interpower and Light. He's going to be talking about our new partnership with National Wildlife Federation and Interfaith Power and Light. And then also joined by Karen Hammonds, who is my co-lead in this new partnership. And so today we're going to be talking about this new partnership and also the upcoming plant sale and our partnerships associated with that, because Earth Day is coming. It is April 22nd on Wednesday, and evidence of renewal and creation is all around us, in our gardens and in nature. And so I'm really excited to do this talk for you today. And so while we can explain our seasons astronomically, Earth rotates around the sun on an axis, we know where we are longitudinally, latitudinally, that's how we get our seasons. It's really hard to explain. It's Jesus's resurrection and its passages in the Bible that remind us of the miracle of new life that comes with each spring. And God calls on us to care for all of God's creation. These are just a few passages. There are many, many more. Unfortunately, we aren't quite living up to the charge that God has called us to do in caring for God's creation. And this is pretty unfortunate, because the resilience for ourselves as humans depends on the resilience and health of our biodiverse ecosystems. So there are approximately 3,500 species, I don't know if you all know this, but 3,500 species of native bees that help increase crop yields. And one of every three bites of food we eat exists because of pollinators. That's a big number. And 75% of all flowering plants depend on pollinators. When I say pollinators, I mean bees, butterflies, moths, birds, bats, and beetles. These elevated extinction risks are profound also just if you look at North America. We see elevated extinction risks for over one-fifth of our native North American pollinators. And if you were alive in the year 1970, I was. No, actually, I wasn't. I wasn't quite alive, but it was close. More than one in four birds in the U.S. and Canada has disappeared within your lifetime. So we've got a bit of a problem. In the U.S., 34% of our plants and 40% of our animals are at risk of extinction, and 41% of ecosystems are at risk of range-wide collapse. That's from a 2023 report from NatureServe. A lot of this is being caused by habitat degradation, invasive species, and climate change. And it's happening all around us. So in terms of pollinators, there just aren't enough native plants in nature to support enough pollinator species that we need for healthy ecosystems in agriculture. If pollinators can't find the right quantity and quality of nectar and pollen from blooming plants within their flight range, they simply won't survive. Without healthy forests and ecosystems, vulnerable human communities are at risk of poor health, food insecurity, and unreliable water sources. So that is why at St. Columba's, we've decided to enter into a new partnership with the National Wildlife Foundation, along with many, many other partners. You can see them all on the bottom, including Interfaith Power and Light. Ethan's going to talk to us a lot more about this program in just a few minutes. But basically, the gist of it is to encourage congregants and parishioners to help people in wildlife plant more native plants to create biodiversity at home through educational programs across denominations, across DC, and I think even nationally. And Ethan will tell us more about that and about ways that we can go from basically the desert of lawns to biodiverse habitats in our backyards, because only 12% of our land in the US is publicly owned and protected for biodiversity and conservation purposes. That leaves a lot of private land, including our land, which means that we own or that we live on, which means we have an opportunity to change the landscape in our own yards and create habitat for our pollinators. So before I hand the mic over to Ethan, I also wanted to highlight another partnership that we at St. Columba's have been involved with for quite a while, and that's with the Sustainable Villages Honduras through our plant sale. Sustainable Villages, so the plant sale, if many of you, I'm sure, have seen it, we do it on Mother's Day every year. Henry Beal, one of our own parishioners, I'm sure you know who Henry is, grows the vast majority of these plants, and he grows them according to the directions of his late wife, Susan Beal. He is really carrying out her dedication and her enthusiasm for plants. And we donate all the proceeds from those sales to Sustainable Villages Honduras, which is a separate 501c3 aimed at promoting healthy food systems in small agricultural communities of Honduras as part of St. Columba's historical Honduras ministry. What Sustainable Village, all the money goes directly to those communities. There's virtually no overhead. What they do with those funds is they experiment with more resilient crops. These are very marginalized rural communities in Honduras who are most vulnerable to the impacts of climate change and changes to how their crops are raised, access to water, et cetera. So Sustainable Villages Honduras is experimenting with more resilient crops, improving water access, in reforesting eroded areas affected by extreme weather, and meeting families' basic needs for shelter and water so that farmers in these areas can continue to thrive despite the massive changes that they are experiencing because of climate change. So what can you do? Come to the Mother's Day plant sale on May 10. Not just come, but buy some plants. There will be, not fruits, there will be vegetables, herbs, flowers. There will be native plants. We will have a native table of native plants for sale. There will also be a table where, if you have pledged to plant native plants through the National Wildlife Federation Interfaith Power and Light Growing Joy Program, you can pick up your free native plant starter kit at our plant sale on May 10. Another thing you can do is learn more about using native plants in your own gardens. These are QR codes to access webinars that we have been that we have access to that the National Wildlife Federation has been doing for us and other congregations. And you can use the last QR code at the bottom to pledge yourself to try planting more native plants in your yards. We're not saying rip everything out, it has to be 100%. No, we're asking just start, give it a try. And these webinars are chock full of information to help you get started. My personal goal at home is to get to about 70% native plants. That's the benchmark standard that Doug Tallamy provides. He's a native plant expert out of the University of Rhode Island. And so I encourage you to check those QR codes out. Hillary here has copies of this slide. And if you're interested, please take one, take a pledge. And I'm going to ask Hillary when she's done passing those out to interested folks. There's also a sign-up sheet. If you are interested in learning more and want to, a lot of, I communicate this through our Environment Committee email distro list in Realm. And so if you're interested in getting emails about more native plant work that we plan to continue to do with the National Wildlife Federation, write your name and your email down, and you'll get my emails and our monthly newsletter from the Environment Committee. So with that, I would like to turn this talk over to Ethan, who's going to tell us more about this Growing Joy Sacred Grounds program with the National Wildlife Federation and IPL. And all I need to do is figure out how to get to your presentation.
Yeah, let's figure that out. I think it escaped.
Is Jamal there? Oh, there we go. They see most of it. Oh, yeah, go. There we go.
Oh, that's awesome. Perfect. We got it. Thank you, thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Karen, and thank you to the Environment Committee in St. Columbus for having me. Hello, as Karen mentioned, my name is Ethan Lucas, Program Associate at Interfaith Power and Light DMV, and one of the leads of the Sacred Grounds Native Plant Program. So a quick disclaimer. I am not a native plant expert, nor a gardening expert or anything of the sort, and I don't play on one on TV either. But I say this because you don't need to be either to understand the importance of native plants and how crucial they are to our ecosystems and solving the climate crisis. In fact, it was this very program, working on it for the past year and a half, that has really opened my eyes to this whole world of how native plants can be used to care for our common home. So, as I mentioned, I'm with Interfaith Power and Light, D.C., Maryland, and Northern Virginia. We work with congregations across the region to go green, save energy, and respond to climate change. And we do this program in partnership with the National Wildlife Federation, as Karen mentioned, who has been working on, you know, on this work, creating wildlife habitat, protecting the environment for over 50 years now. And they are incredible partners. And we do it along with them and our friends, Interfaith Partners for the Chesapeake, Defensoros de la Cuenta, and Friends of Sligo Creek. And you see our smiling faces there. And we could not do it without the great funding of our partners, the Chesapeake Bay Trust, as well as the local municipalities in D.C., Prince George's County, and Montgomery County. You know, they are the ones that not only help us administer this program, but also get all the free plants that you all will be getting on May 10th if you pledge, as well as for our garden potentially as well, and all of the other things that go along with this program. So we thank you very much for that. And this program came about 15 years ago or so. My church was actually, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Gaithersburg was actually one of the pilots before I even knew what this program was. So it was a great full circle moment for me to be able to work on this program. And really came about of, you know, NWF had been working, you know, on where people live, work, play, and learn, but not where they worship. And there was a massive gap there that needed to be filled because our congregations and people of faith are so important to this conversation. And so, and they, our faiths are so important to this conversation, because all of our faiths have a relationship to conserving our natural world. Here is St. Francis of Assisi at St. Camilla's Church in Tacoma Park. Just a beautiful, beautiful mural there. And so what can we do? All of our faiths inspire us to make a difference. Here are just a few concepts and teachings from many faiths that describe our awareness and purpose to acting to care for creation. You know, I'll say that that the theme of resurrection is really great for today's talk, because really through native plants, we can create a story of triumph and renewal of these really beautiful, delicate ecosystems that God created and that us humans over the years have harmed. And so every choice that we make for the earth right now is about choosing life. And what we plant in our yards is a matter of choosing life and caring for people and wildlife. And we do that in one way through planting native plants. So, what is a native plant? A native plant is naturally evolved in the region that it's in and thrives in the soil and weather conditions of that region. You could say that it's an indigenous plant. These native plants, thrive on the environment that they're in, and so do the wildlife that is around it. And they rely on each other for survival. And so the Sacred Grounds program, of which you're part of our Growing Joy cohort, we help congregations do this work in six ways. One, creating wildlife habitat. Two, beautifying the grounds in a sustainable way. Three, reducing and preparing and coping with climate change, something that we'll talk about a bit later. Cleaning our waterways, something we'll also talk about. Putting faith into practice by caring for creation. And also saving money, which I know everyone loves. So we will cover in this presentation what are the problems in our area, why native plants are part of the solution, and how you can help at home and in this congregation. So let's start with a little bit about of a context of where we are. So we see here three major rivers near Sacred Grounds congregations in Maryland and Washington, D.C. So we have the Anacostia, the Potomac, and the Patuxent. These are among the 150 major rivers and streams we have in this region, along with the hundreds of smaller tributaries, all that flow into the Chesapeake Bay. And so one of the problems that we have is stormwater runoff that goes into these rivers and streams and onto the Chesapeake Bay. And why is that an issue, and what is that? Well, it's rain that falls on our land, but the way that our land is managed, there are two different things that can happen. One, if we have natural grounds, that rain falls and soaks into the ground. But when we have hard impervious surfaces like roads, roofs, parking lots, all that runoff that carries litter, sediment, pet waste, motor oil, antifreeze, any type of pollution that you can think of that we put into our world goes downstream and infects our waterways. And we don't want that, right? And so here's a photo of local flooding into the Anacostia. It goes into the sewer, like you can see here, and then into the river. We don't want this. And so why are congregations important to this problem? Well, oftentimes congregations have large parking lots, large roofs, and big lawns, which we'll talk about just in a minute why lawns are incredibly important to this conversation too. And it's not just congregations that are, you know, in part that are making this problem worse, but also congregations are, in a sense, victims of this flooding and problems too. This is Jones Memorial United Methodist Church and in DC, and they were having a lot of problems themselves with flooding. Water would come down this tree from their parking lot and from the street, and it would flood into their below ground sanctuary. And so they came to us a number of years ago with this problem, and you'll see a bit later in some photos, they have a beautiful, beautiful garden and have done so much work with us, and their flooding has stopped. And stormwater flooding can be dangerous to all, and particularly dangerous to people in low-income areas. Mobile homes and less expensive housing tends to be located in floodplains, with more flooding from coming from climate change. And increased flooding even in small creeks. More development means flooding becomes worse. And this is all from impervious surfaces. And they're going to be continuing to get worse and worse with climate change. Stormwater collects pollution from roads, sewer, from sewer overflows, pesticides, fertilizers that people use on their lawns too. Stormwater is often polluted and dangerous to critters and, of course, people. This is a photo, I believe, down near Nationals Park, and you just see all of the litter that has gone in from that sewer into that waterway. And so here's the thing about lawns. They're like concrete. We have, for so many years, have been told again and again, you want this big, beautiful lawn. That's the ideal. But come to realize that that is part of the problem. Its shallow roots don't hold water or pollutants and lead to more runoff, just like our concrete does. It doesn't help and it makes it worse. They also don't take pollutants from the air like carbon that make the climate crisis worse. And they also require that carbon to be maintained and look pretty. So to illustrate this, you see, on the right here, we have a bunch of native plants here. So we have the common ninebark, we have the black-eyed Susan, which I'm sure all of you know, with these long root systems that take all this water in that we need to be sequestered, and they need as well. But then you see on left here, you see these other non-native plants that have root systems that are much, much smaller. And then you look towards the middle there and you see that fescue turf, that's grass. It's so small you can barely see it, and it's because the roots are that small. And so this all relates to climate change. Climate change is exacerbating and causing great harm to our common home, as Pope Francis states. One of the biggest impacts in our country is increased precipitation and frequency. Even in some dry areas, it is coming all at once in huge quantities. Again, increased precipitation with climate change getting worse, bigger and more frequent storms, more flooding, which means more stormwater runoff, harmful nutrients, increased chemicals, lawn care, salt, other things that all flow into our rivers and streams and go to the Chesapeake Bay that is so, so precious to our region and to everybody, really. And as well as extreme heat, drought, high winds. We all know this. We see this on the news. Weather getting worse. Our climate is getting worse, and we are increasingly feeling it. And so municipalities across the nation, but especially in our region, have come up with climate action plans. This one in particular is from Prince George's County. Their goal is to reduce climate emissions by 50% by 2030. But Montgomery County, DC, other municipalities in this area are doing the same thing. While mitigation is taking action to reduce or prevent greenhouse gases and carbon increases, our goal within the sacred grounds is a focus on adaptation, where we are changing how we manage our grounds and address climate impacts. And so again, Prince George's County, they have things like focusing on things like stormwater management, flood reduction, green infrastructure, and nature-based solutions like green roofs, rain gardens, and native plants. And it doesn't have to be just your congregation that does this. You can get incentives from wherever, whatever county or municipality you live in to do this. Prince George's County, Montgomery County, DC all have programs for this. And so, as Karen mentioned in her presentation as well, native plants support birds, bees, and butterflies that we need and we love. The need for supporting wildlife and biodiversity has never been greater. One-third of fish and wildlife species in the U.S. are vulnerable to becoming threatened or endangered, and one-fifth are at high risk of extinction. For example, the most well-known and loved of these species, the monarch butterfly, is in severe decline, having lost over 90% of its population over the last 30 years. St. Michael's Archangel and Oshay Shalom Synagogue in this area both planted milkweed and got monarchs to return to their grounds. That's amazing. And our beloved birds, like the meadowlark and others, are also declining. And again, climate change is exacerbating these declines. So, what can we do to help? All wildlife needs these four things to survive, with food being the most important. The same things that we as humans need: food, water, cover, and places to raise their young. And again, lawns are like concrete. They don't provide food for pollinators, birds, or others. And so, as Karen talked about, the great Doug Tallamy has talked about this a lot and has worked with Sacred Grounds a lot and pioneered a lot of this science. Again, another thing is these beautiful caterpillars that these birds need to feed on. So by supporting native plants, you are supporting caterpillars, and therefore you are supporting birds as well that use them to feed. It is, our ecosystems are all interconnected. So if you want to feed the birds, do this by planting native plants. Let me skip through here. And so all of these just show how much of a difference native plants make as opposed to their non-native counterparts. And so, one other thing, as Karen mentioned also, what's the buzz about all these pollinators? Insect pollinators, bees, butterflies, wasps, and flies, pollinate 80% of all flowering plants and aid in pollination of 70% of all crop varieties. But what does that mean for us? Fruits, nuts, cocoa beans, vanilla, all things that we love and need. So when we support wildlife, when we support these insects by planting native plants, we also feel the benefits as well. And these are some of the 400 species of bees in Maryland. So a few years back, we did studies on the lawns and gardens of some of our sacred grounds congregations. You see here that this was what we found in a lawn by one of our congregations. Pretty sparse. You know, very, very vanilla type of, you know, insects, you know, bees, flies, other things. But then you look at this. This was what we found in the native garden. So many bees, so many butterflies, so many wasps, beetles that were not there before. Because these native plants and these gardens are their habitat. And so instead of this, we want this. And isn't that beautiful? Wouldn't you want to live in a place full of so many kinds of colorful, fascinating creatures? I know I would. Native plants are better. Simple as that. Before, we focused on the decorative value of native plants. What looked pretty, what we just wanted to put there, what was cheapest. But we can also take that into account and also focus on the value of food, on pollinator habitat, on carbon that helps climate change, value on our watershed. All of these things we can take into account. And so through Sacred Grounds, we create wildlife habitat, help congregations live out their faith by doing this, get congregations involved, and then reach beyond and spread the word. And so we work with tons of congregations across the area. Here's a black church in Prince George's County. This is Jones Memorial. We put in gardens at congregations. This is Osei Siloam. This is St. Michael's. So tons of photos and tons of stories of beautiful community being made and great impact being made over native plants. And it really does take a community. Jones Memorial was flooding. This was the aftermath. This is their native plant garden. And they've come back and done a bunch more work with us. This was St. Michael in Silver Spring, a former asphalt playground area now buzzing with life. Also a mom center in Silver Spring, formerly a gravel area, now a beautiful garden. And so it's not just your congregation, but also you in your small lawn that can make a big difference. So you can do this at your home right now. You can certify as a wildlife habitat through the National Wildlife Federation. But you also don't have to just do that. If you don't have a large lawn, or you're in an apartment, or just don't have the time or energy or ability to create a garden, you can create a container garden. I'm sure we all have some type of pot or container of plants in, you know, or out of our homes. You can do this and it's still buzzing with life. And so this is what you can do. You know, as Karen mentioned, you can sign up to pledge here to get native plants on May 10th. The QR code is here, and that's also with you now via that handout. And pick up your native plants on May 10th. Here are some beautiful photos of our starter kits being made and handed out. Just a beautiful way of sharing the love of nature and plants and community. And so we have given, this number is actually wrong, we've given around 15,000 plants to homes across the DMV, and a lot more coming. And so a couple other things, we're also doing a native plant garden tour this summer. So stay tuned for information about that, as well as boat tours to see the rivers that we are impacting across our region. And then if you also want to know more about what you can do in your home in planting native plants and helping our environment, you can join us on June 20th at Jones Memorial to learn more about what DC is offering for you to do this yourself. And so, in conclusion, what we do for the earth is helping us all stay alive. It is choosing life for us and for wildlife. So, I hope you will join us in planting native plants at home and on your congregation grounds. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ian. I mean, Ethan, sorry. I don't know where Ian came from. Anyway, we have time for a few questions, and the information about those tours that Ethan mentioned, I'll be reminding folks about those through our Environment Committee email list. So if you want to keep up with that stuff, make sure I have you on my email list. So any questions? Sure, do you want to come up to the mic so we can hear you, please? Oh, there's one right there. Is that gonna work? Okay, good. Thank you.
Ethan, I would like to know if there are any ways that we can plant native plants where the rivers are so the rivers will be clear.
Can I take that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the thing about why native plants are important is again, as I said, really soaking up those nutrients and the pollution that we, you know, put into our world. And so those are best done at the source, to have it everywhere so that that pollution doesn't even get to our rivers and streams. Because as you know, we have rivers, we have streams, we have other bodies of water, and it is all interconnected and flows into the Chesapeake. So the best place to do it is where you are.
Thanks, Ian. Thank you. And any other questions? Just come on up to the mic.
Thank you for your presentation. I have a question about, can you, the care of natural garden, native garden, does it need to be watered in the same way as other plants do? One of the things I do, I have a couple of planters outside my front door, and it's great now, but when in the summer, when I go away for a week, I come back and they're all dead. And I'm just wondering if native plants are more of survivors than the plants that we usually buy. And the other question is, can you do native garden in the shade, or does it need sunshine?
So, yeah, I can take that. So thanks, Joy. So as far as watering goes, native plants, once they're established, because you saw that image that Ethan had with those really deep roots, they are actually very resilient to drought conditions, but they need a couple years to get established. So once you plant your native plants in your garden, you need to be prepared to water them pretty regularly so they can get through a couple of years to get that really robust root structure in place. Personally, I just got all my soaker hoses set up, and they're hooked up to my rain barrel, and I turn that little button on, I walk away, and it's great. And right now I'm hoping my rain barrel's filling back up again because it was empty a day ago. So, and then in containers, Yeah, if you, I don't think it really matters if it's in non-native or native plants in containers on warm days, especially like we just had last week, getting up close to 90, you're gonna need to water those probably potentially every day, maybe even twice a day, because they just don't have the amount of soil to keep their roots healthy and to keep the plant robust. I mean, it's all in the roots, right? If you don't have a healthy root system, the plant's not going to do well above ground. So hopefully that answered your question. Oh, and shade. Yeah, you can definitely plant native plants in shade. Most of my yard is shady. And so I'm experimenting with all kinds of shade-loving native plants, foam flower, what's the one, it just escaped my brain, ferns, there's a lot of native ferns. There's a lot of them. There are a lot of shade-loving native plants. Any other questions?
Quick question, as I look at the butterflies there, are there any native plants maybe, can you name two or three that maybe attract them? Native plants that attract the butterflies, specific pollinators.
Sure, do you wanna take that one?
Yeah, you might know a little bit more than I do, being a great gardener. But yes, there are. There are specific plants that you can plant that do bring particular pollinators. We've planted plants at congregations, and as I mentioned, that they've gotten monarchs. I can't remember the specific names of the plants.
You probably know off the top of your head.
Milkweed is great.
Yes.
And there's multiple kinds of milkweed. There's milkweed is great. Garden phlox is great. Echinacea is great. Pretty much any native flowering plant is going to attract some kind of pollinator. Some of them will attract generalists that go to a lot of different plants, and some will attract specific plants or specific pollinators that only use that particular plant. But if you plant a native plant, it will attract pollinators and birds year round. In the fall, I don't take the seeds off of my echinacea, but I leave them up for the seed heads to dry because the goldfinches love them. And I just love seeing the bright yellow goldfinch come in the fall and feast on the echinacea seed pods. Any other questions? All right, well, before we let out, let's see, we do have Joshua, did you want to stand up? We also have Josh here from Interfaith Power and Light, and it's gonna give us a sneak preview of a program that you all are starting to launch.
Yeah, well, good morning. I'm Josh Long, you're from Power and Light. First of all, just gonna give another applause for Ethan for doing a wonderful job on the presentation. So with Interfaith Power and Light, we do a lot of different things. One, native plant programs, we do things with solar energy, we do things with environmental justice and advocacy work. And this year, one of the things that we've been focusing on is our program called Real Wisdom Over AI. And we have this little poster. We've been taking pictures with folks. If you want to take a picture with holding the sign after the forum, you're welcome to do that. But we're going to come back in the fall and do a program around data centers and the harms that the hyperscaling of data centers that have happened in the past 2 years, one of the reasons why electricity bills are going up, and companies that had really good, ambitious climate goals are rolling some of those back so that they can circumvent them, all in the name of AI. And if you feel like AI is being thrown and thrust in your face, it really is. They're really pushing this in a way that just feels unnatural, unhealthy. There's nothing wrong with innovation. Nothing wrong with technology, but we can do things in a safe and just and way that's sustainable for our environment and for people. So we'll definitely be doing that in the fall. If you have any more questions or want to learn more about Interfaith Power and Light, our work, you can go to ipldmv.org, and we look forward to seeing you all then. Thank you.
Thanks, Joshua. Oh, Karen Hammonds.
Pollinators, type that matching pollinators to flowers, type it into your search engine. You will get a list that matches. For example, bees are attracted to bright yellow, blue, and violet colors, often with ultraviolet nectar guides and landing for landing and platforms. So and there's a whole list of birds, bees, flower, whatever, hummingbirds, beetles, even the shapes and the scents that they have make a difference in what is attracted.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. If you have any other questions, come find me or Karen Hammonds at coffee hour. It's this Sunday or next. Maybe we'll see you at the plant sale. Thank you.